You're listening to After All Things, WSHU's daily news and culture update from the Long Island Sound region. A Connecticut bill would expand sick leave for private sector workers. New York could still eliminate the 100-foot rule before the session ends. Eversource customers can expect a rate hike this summer. And why is so much of Connecticut's development built near vulnerable inland wetlands? Those stories and more are ahead. I'm Sabrina Garone. The proposal to expand Connecticut's paid sick leave law has won approval in the state house after it failed to make it last year. WSHU's Ebong Udama has more.
Connecticut's 13-year-old paid sick leave law applies to employers with more than 50 workers and covers only about 12% of private sector workers. Manny Sanchez is a House chair of the Labor Committee. He says the bill would expand the law over the next 3 years to include all employers.
That will start January 1st, 2025 at 25 employees, then move down to 11 by 2026, and then to one employee in 2027.
Employers who already offer their workers 5 paid sick days a year are exempt. Republicans oppose the bill. They argue it's unfair to mom-and-pop shops. The bill has the support of Governor Ned Lamont. It now goes to the Senate. Ebong Udama, WSHU News.
The recently approved New York State budget did not include what environmentalists call a key anti-climate change provision. That's despite the backing of a majority of lawmakers. As Karen DeWitt reports, advocates blame the state assembly for killing the bill, but the assembly speaker is not ruling out passing it before the session ends.
The measure would rescind what's known as the 100-foot rule. That requires that utility ratepayers subsidize gas hookup installations within 100 feet of a home or business. It also would cap utility bills for low-income New Yorkers and make it easier for gas companies to help customers convert to energy-saving devices like heat pumps. Lisa Marshall of New Yorkers for Clean Power says the measure is key to meeting the state's Climate Protection Act goal of net zero emissions by 2050.
The assembly is where climate bills go to die.
Liz Moran with Earth Justice agrees.
The assembly ultimately didn't come to the table in good faith on this. And there's a disturbing trend we're seeing with the assembly.
New York Heat is backed by Governor Kathy Hochul. It was approved several times in the state Senate. Moran says last year, June was marked by distinct signs of climate change, including record heat waves and smoke from Canadian wildfires. And she says that could happen again this year, right when assembly members are deciding whether to vote on the measure or not. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt for the New York Public News Network.
The agency that investigates complaints of election impropriety in Connecticut wants more money and staff. WSHU's Shelley Hassman Kadish reports the State Elections Enforcement Commission discussed understaffing at a meeting this week.
The commission says it's having trouble keeping up with its caseload because of all the resources dedicated to the Bridgeport election ballot scandal. SEEC's executive director said that 4 of their 5 investigators have been working solely on complaints stemming from the Bridgeport mayoral primary last year. The team is investigating widespread allegations of absentee ballot fraud. Last week, 2 of the complaints were referred to the Chief State's Attorney's Office for investigations of possible criminal activity. State lawmakers have said it is unlikely the SEEC will get more funding this year. Shelley Hassman Kadish, WSHU News.
Connecticut needs more affordable housing, but much of the land that's slated for new builds is vulnerable to flooding. That story is ahead. First, a message from our supporter.
Local support comes from Hartford Healthcare, the only health system in the Northeast, with all its hospitals receiving A grades for safety from the Leapfrog Group, the nation's leading independent safety watchdog group. HartfordHealthcare.org.
The Metropolitan Transportation Authority has fired an MTA employee and suspended 11 LIRR workers for submitting fake COVID-19 vaccine cards. An investigation began in 2022 after the arrest of Julie Duvuono, a nurse practitioner from Amityville. She pled guilty to charges of forging vaccine cards, money laundering, and offering a false instrument for filing. New Haven Mayor Justin Elliker is calling for 100 more volunteer tutors to help elementary school students brush up on their math and reading skills this summer. The citywide tutoring effort has attracted 1,700 kids last year. Electric bills for Eversource customers in Connecticut are slated to go up this summer. Patrick Scahill reports that's according to new bill projections released by the utility this week.
Eversource says the average residential customer will see a monthly bill hike of about $13 starting July 1st. The increase comes amid a scheduled mid-year adjustment to electric bills and as state regulators recently approved 10-month rate adjustments for Eversource and United Illuminating. UI says the average customer will see bills go up about $30 a month due to that change. Utilities say the latest round of rate adjustments are pass-through costs they do not control, which are needed to help recoup expenses for policies enacted by lawmakers. But lawmakers have scoffed at the rate hikes, calling the changes unsustainable in a state with some of the highest electric rates in the country. For the New England News Collaborative, I'm Patrick Scahill.
New England needs more housing, and especially affordable housing. But what happens when the land picked for that housing is also valuable in the fight to slow climate change? As part of the Earth Day series from the New England News Collaborative, WSHU's Davis Donovan takes us to communities in Connecticut where this decision is actively playing out.
I'm on a hill overlooking the town of Newtown, Connecticut. You can see church steeples poking out from the trees. It's peaceful and idyllic, a well-known view to locals. Last month, the town's Inland Wetlands Commission narrowly voted to allow a 117-unit housing development between here and nearby Taunton Lake. The local land trust appealed that vote over concerns about stormwater runoff into the wetlands, which is part of a land preserve. Newtown's one of several suburban Connecticut towns where groups known as Inland Wetlands Commissions are making big decisions around large housing developments.
Thank you. Any other members of the public that would like to speak?
Christine Raska.
In Middletown last year, residents opposed a 148-unit development due to concerns about stormwater runoff when rain or snow washes over impervious pavement, picking up fuel, chemicals, and other pollution before emptying into waterways.
I'm not against development, but I am pro-environment. And in this case, we have beautiful wetlands that we have fought to preserve, and any kind of stormwater inflow into the wetlands that eventually gets there is going to have some kind of an impact.
The developer withdrew their application last year and came back earlier this week with a scaled-down version. There have been similar cases in Fairfield and New Canaan, and a bill currently in the State General Assembly would put new limits on wetlands reviews and make them easier to appeal.
That gets to the question of who gets to live at the top of the hill.
Denise Savageau is an environmental planner. She says there's a paradox in why developers would put so much effort into troublesome land.
Land that is more valuable is land that is dry, because then you don't have to go through these regulatory processes. But it's not only regulatory processes. If you're going to do housing or development right and sustainably, there's a lot of challenges working in these systems where that are subject to flooding, where you have high groundwater tables, right? So it's the cheapest land. These were wastelands at one point. They were the lands that were given away. So a lot of our schools are built in or near wetlands because that was the cheap land. So a lot of times you'll see schools and all their athletic fields, and it's like, why are the athletic fields flood every spring? Because a lot of them are built on filled wetlands. So developers are looking like, what land do I get cheap? And then what do I do with it?
Wetlands may be cheap for developers, but Savageau says they're a valuable tool against climate change. They act as carbon sinks, pulling greenhouse gases from the air. They serve as habitats for migratory birds or sensitive species.
Wetlands are regulators. They're really valuable. They're the ones that help protect us from drought. They help protect us from flooding. They are really important for water quality. They're a really important part of our ecosystem and provide numerous ecosystem services.
Connecticut enshrined wetlands protection into state law in 1972 and created the local inland wetlands commissions that are now a unique part of Connecticut's zoning process.
It's been delegated to the towns.
Charles Vidic is with the Western Council of Governments.
Wetland agencies have been also given many other functions, which has diluted their purpose. Forest management, they're also doing floodplain management or environmental impact studies, a whole range of other things. In a way, they've become a wastebasket for many functions. They give it to the Inland Wetland Agency, thinking they don't have much to do.
Vidic says nearby states like Vermont have far more state oversight and protection for wetlands at the state level. Some wetlands that would have state protection in Vermont only have local commissions to protect them in Connecticut.
Every development proposal is a negotiated settlement of how much wetlands we're going to take because we have no practical alternative, let's say. This is the evolution of development where there's no land left except wetlands. So are we then going to fill them?
But some housing advocates say local wetlands challenges could be a form of NIMBYism, possibly to keep out low-income residents. Erin Boggs is with Open Communities Alliance.
If you look at the major cases where wetlands decisions are being challenged, they almost always are about affordable housing.
But she says that's not how it has to be.
Because the environment is so important, it is all the more critical that these decisions be made based on true environmental considerations and that this whole process not be hijacked to prevent much needed mixed income housing from going in.
Boggs says affordable housing, when done comprehensively, including multifamily housing, is actually the more environmentally friendly option.
Most of Connecticut is large lot single family homes. This forces us to be spread out. It really compels us to be driving cars everywhere. It takes up land that otherwise could be open space or farmland. It doesn't make a lot of sense. It is some of the worst kind of development if we really care about the environment. So if we can build in denser, more walkable ways, it is great for the environment.
Savageau, the environmental planner, agrees, but she says that just shows that wetlands are all too often the wrong place to build affordable housing. She says developers should look at areas that are already built out, even if they're more expensive, and that'd be better for residents, too.
If all of a sudden we're saying we need to do affordable housing everywhere, and we're putting affordable housing out in a community where, well, we've got some cheap land here and it's wetlands, and that's why it wasn't possibly built upon, and that's why the land is cheap. But do they have access to jobs? Do they have access to transportation?
Big questions to consider for a board made up of local volunteers who have to juggle everything from floodplain management to environmental impact studies. Davis Donovan, WSHU News.
Thank you so much for listening to After All Things, WSHU's daily news update from around the Long Island Sound, supported by Hartford Healthcare. If you're new to the podcast, you may not be aware of all the other great content that WSHU has to offer, so let me just take a second to introduce ourselves or reintroduce ourselves. We're an NPR member station, so yes, that means we're also on the radio, where you can hear even more news from Southern Connecticut and Long Island. In addition to the news, we're playing beautiful and relaxing classical music to help you get through the day. We also have a number of compelling podcasts available to you online at WSHU.org, on the WSHU app, and really wherever you like to listen to podcasts. It's all possible thanks to our listeners. So if you're new here, welcome. We are so glad to have you. And if you've been with us for a while now, thank you for your continued support. I'm Sabrina Garone. Have a great rest of your day. I'll talk to you tomorrow. Thank you.